to MTG Pro Tutor, the podcast that gathers high-level tactics by talking to your favorite Pro Tour Magic players. Whether you're just beyond starter decks or a hardcore grinder, we'll draw strategies you can use today to build stronger decks with killer results. Play like a pro here at MTG Pro Tutor. Now welcome the man with an unbeatable force of will, your thought courier and demonic tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome one and all to the inaugural episode of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I'm Sean Penrod, your host, and I'm super stoked to embark on this journey with you. We're going to dive into the minds of Magic the Gathering's greatest players and pull out actionable tips that you can use the next time you sit down to play. Make sure you stick around to the end of the episode so you can learn how you can enter our booster pack giveaway. Without further ado, let's dive right into the interview. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. Today, I am truly excited to kick things off with our featured guest. He is a Hall of Famer, Pro Tour champion, and five-time Pro Tour Top 8 competitor. Author of Next Level Magic and Next Level Deck Building, his articles can be found on StarCityGames.com, and his own podcast can be found at TopLevelPodcast.com. Today, we have none other than Patrick the Innovator Chapin. Patrick, how are you doing today?
Oh, fantastic. How are you doing, Sean?
Excellent. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with our audience tips to take their game to the next level?
A daunting proposition, but I am excited to dive on in.
Sweet. So Patrick, I've shared a little bit about you, but we want to know you a little bit more personally. And so share what you have going on in your life.
I live out in Denver, Colorado right now, or at least my stuff is here. I'm here a fair bit, but I travel a great deal. I'm a professional Magic player, but I'm also a game designer, kind of just working a bazillion hours a week. I'm a game designer at Direwolf Digital here in Denver, and I write books about Magic, Next Level Magic, and Next Level Deck Building. You already hit on the podcast and various Magic stuff like that, but I guess I'm a professional Magic player who is involved in gaming a whole bunch and really relishes an opportunity to travel around the world playing Magic.
That's awesome. And I want to share my little story with you, just so everybody knows. So when I got this whole thing started, I really wanted to do something in the Magic space, and I put my thinking cap on. And I thought really hard for a while, and coming up with all these ideas and stuff. And then I had this brilliant idea. I was like, oh my gosh, that's perfect. Next Level Magic. It like really incorporated what I wanted to do, taking people's game to the next level, stuff like that. And I don't know how I missed it, but I was sharing that with my brother and my friend. My friend did a search. He's like, hey, you know some guy, because he doesn't play Magic. He's like, wrote a book about that already. I'm like, what? Like I said, I don't know how I missed it. So sure enough, I find your book, and I reach out to Patrick, and I said, hey, I have this URL. Here's what I want to do. Basically, do you mind if I use it? And Patrick was really gracious. He came back. He said, hey, that URL wasn't available when I wrote the book, but since I do have the book and it's kind of my IP, I would like to use that type of deal. And I thought, hey, no problem. And I was more than happy to give that URL to you. And again, like I said, Patrick was really gracious. He said, hey, I shared with him what I was kind of thinking of doing, and he said, hey, I like what you're doing, and if there's anything I can do to help out, let me know. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, you kind of laid out a plan of how of some of the Magic, all the different stuff you want to do with Magic Media and with helping people get better at Magic. And it's super awesome. The stuff that you're talking about, definitely super, super excited to see what all you do. And I definitely very much appreciate, looked at Next Level Magic, nextlevelmagic.com, which I'm going to be doing more stuff with in the future. But having that as a, obviously Next Level Magic was my first book.
Right,
it's super obviously. Awesome, because before somebody was just sitting on it before, and I guess they let it lapse. And I very much appreciate you thinking of me and reaching out to me. And honestly, MTG Pro Tutor, I'm just excited to see what all you do with it. And it's an honor to be your first guest.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm super excited to go forward. So one question I have is, where does the Innovator come from? Where does that nickname come from?
It's funny because it's a question that I get asked a bunch that I think there's like a misunderstanding about a few. I don't know. I tell you what. How about this? When I first was writing articles for Star City, I signed my name a different way each week. Or not, it wasn't even week because they weren't weekly articles. I had to write articles through the mail, and it was like a whole slow process for the turnaround. But each of my articles, I signed my name a different way. And it just so happened that one of the articles, I signed my name Patrick Chapin, the innovator. The next week, I actually signed, or the next article anyway, I signed my name a different way because I was just signing my name a different way in every article. But people started calling me that.
Oh.
And it's funny because some number of people are like, oh, did you give yourself your own nickname? And it's like, first of all, it's not even a nickname. I mean, did Jay-Z give himself his nickname? No, it's not a nickname. Right. It's just, you know, it's a handle for writing. But
right.
In this spot, it actually accidentally, organically came up because of the fact that of the like, changing it each week, that was one that a bunch of people really started repeating. And once other people started repeating it, I just started using it anyway and just embraced it because you could do a lot worse than, I mean, I've been called a lot worse, you know.
Nice. Awesome. Cool.
But I think that the reason that it feels particularly appropriate is because of how much I value innovation and how much I make it a priority to think about how to innovate and how to actually select among innovations what will actually be useful. And it's just a very important part of the game for me.
That's awesome. And that's where I thought, you know, it came from, was from your experience and ongoing practice of innovating every, you know,
maybe
new formats.
Maybe that's why other people started repeating that one. I don't know.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So you talked about how you are a game designer and then professional Magic player. And so those two are pretty close hand in hand. You know, some people have other, you know, professional lives that aren't really related to Magic at all. So I guess,
well, this is actually quite a bit different. I mean, I've been doing game design, at, you know, various times for a very, very long time, but I mean, working for a video game company, it's not as similar to Magic as you might think. There's some amount of overlap to be sure, because people who are good at Magic can definitely, you know, they're above average likely to be good at a few other areas. But this is very much, this is definitely a different job that requires a different skill set.
So have you brought anything from your professional life into how you play Magic or vice versa?
Well, definitely brought a shortage of time compared to what it used to be like before I was working so much. But there's a lot to be learned about like team building and functioning as an organization.
Okay.
In Magic, it's very easy to operate as an individual, but I think that there's a lot of advantage to working as a team and working at a, you know, working at various game companies has helped me learn a lot more about team. You know, preparing as a team, working as a team, teamwork, team management, team, you know, how to cultivate a team, whatever.
Right. That's cool. That's really cool. Thank you. Patrick, you've had an amazing journey thus far playing Magic. And what we want to do here is we want to close the gap between where you are and where our listeners are. And the best way that I know how to do that is through stories. And so we want to hear a story about you from the early days of Magic. Like, I want to be right there over your shoulder. Tell us a story of an early challenge that you struggled with, and then like how you overcame that challenge.
Well, one of the earliest challenges that I remember that was really, really important, I guess, was the battle, and this has been kind of a recurring thing, but the battle to try to convince people of how good I was. As a kid, I really had I had such a strong desire to try to prove to everybody, oh, I'm already really good. I have a lot of ego invested in this. I need to prove to you how good I am. Mm-hmm. And that's a thing that has reemerged at various times in some different incarnations without my even realizing it. And I think it's a very common thing for people to encounter. And overcoming it wasn't as simple as a little epiphany where there's like a light switch and it's just different. It was more of a getting to a place of instead trying to prove to myself, and not even prove as in I'm already good enough, but instead of focusing on the proof side, just focus on improvement by being, you know, by seeking to be the best, the highest version of myself I can be, the absolute best, you know, like I envision myself the best possible way that I can think of, that I can believe in, and try to and move towards that as best I can. And all of the rest of the stuff falls into place over time. And trying to stay humble and focus on improving yourself, while at the same time not worrying about the fact that the more tournaments you go to, the more tournaments you play in, and the more that you interact with more people who don't really know you, there are going to be more times where people think things about you that are, maybe they don't realize how good you are. Maybe they think you're annoying. Maybe they think you're a jerk. Maybe they think that you're like anything about you. Maybe they think that you owe all your success to somebody else you worked with. Whatever they think about you, there's such an innate desire to want to try to convince people, no, I'm not a jerk. I'm a nice person. You should like me. No, I'm actually good. You should. And that's not actually like, trying to convince people of these things is not as useful as improving yourself. Something that's a little bit easier of a quicker challenge than just the, you know, realizing that I wanted to focus on humility and self-improvement. Something that was a little bit more of a light switch flip over to a new position was at my first adult pro tour in Paris back in 97. You know, because I played in 96 in the junior division, but in early 97, I played in Pro Tour Paris, the first international Pro Tour. And it was, I had at the time a Bloom combo deck, Bloom Drain combo deck, which part of the significance, the historical significance to Magic of that was that before this particular combo deck, nobody had ever done well in major tournaments with combo decks. Okay. It used to be that the only decks that would ever do well were control decks, land destruction decks, or aggressive decks. Combo decks would almost never... Now, once in a while, there would be something, but for the most part, combo wasn't a very big part of the Pro Tour. This Pro Tour, I had... I was one of the people who had the best version of the best combo deck, and it was going to revolutionize Magic. I actually was in the hotel room with Mike Long, who went on to win the tournament with this combo deck. I was in the hotel room testing and preparing with the Pro Tour winner the night before the tournament started. And I made a rookie mistake, a young kid mistake. Mike was already like competing at national tournaments before there was even a Pro Tour. He was one of the greatest deck builders and greatest minds in the game from year one of the Pro Tour, or before the Pro Tour, from year one of Magic. But in talking with him, I was super excited about how unbelievably good our build of the deck was. And later at a meeting, there was a player meeting where all the people in the Pro Tour back then they used to do a question and answer thing where people could ask the head judge questions to try to clarify, because the internet wasn't very big back then. Right. So asking the head judge rules questions would be very helpful to people to make sure that we're all on the same page with what the rules currently are. And somebody asked a question that... They asked, can you cast Infernal Contract at zero life? And Infernal Contract is a card that requires you to pay half your life. And the reason this is significant is because at the time you could still play at zero life. You weren't dead until the end of the turn. But the only reason you weren't dead until the end of the phase. So wow. you could play your whole turn, build tons of mana at zero life. And then as long as you drain life to your opponent for like 30, you'd be fine.
Wow.
The only reason anybody would ask that question, though, was that it was obvious to anybody at the event, though, that people were asking that because of a reason. And so people would start asking, wait, why do people want to know about why you could, you know, can you Infernal Contract at zero life? And that was the missing link. There were a number of people who knew that Bloom Drain combo decks existed, but most people didn't realize how good they were because they didn't have the missing link. Infernal Contract was the missing link, and somebody effectively spoiled it, like gave everybody this technology the night before the tournament. And as a kid, I was only 16 at the time. I overreacted. I thought, oh my God, everybody's going to play Bloom combo decks and anti-Bloom decks. And what I didn't take into consideration was that, no, people are going to play the deck they brought.
Right.
And just because they have this new piece of technology, it doesn't mean they instantly understand the best way to apply this. And as a result, I gave up the best deck. I could have played the best deck. I gave it up.
Oh, no.
And I played a deck that was designed to do one thing, beat that deck. And then I went 2-5, because guess what? Not very many people played that deck.
Nobody played the deck. Right?
Some people did, but not very many, because most people at a tournament are going to play a huge variety of stuff.
Man,
so the point is, you got to be real careful. It's super tempting for people to throw out all their testing the night before the tournament and overreact to a small piece of information they gain. Don't do it. You gotta believe in the testing. You gotta believe in the information that you have found. Don't panic and throw it out the window and do something crazy.
That's super interesting. Thank you. That's really cool. Yeah, because I'm just beginning to go to big tournaments myself, and so coming across that kind of information is definitely going to be helpful. I guess some other quick background basic questions that I don't know the answers to. When did you start playing Magic? What's that?
Well, it was a little bit of a blur because it wasn't so much just straight up. I mean, I had my first cards that I actually played a whole bunch with, like Fallen Empires was one of the most recent sets, and the Dark. But like Fallen Empires had just come out. But I was introduced to it before I had cards. It started with my mom actually bought me a booster pack of Arabian Nights when she was at a hobby shop in Michigan to get me as a present in 93. But
what
then
a cool
she,
mom.
But she returned it because she found out, she gave it back because it didn't have a rule book. Arabian Nights is not enough to play, and it's like, oh, you need a whole bunch of this other thing to play, and they didn't have that because I think they were like sold out of beta at the time. And so my mom put it back. So I had this near brush with it, but I didn't know enough to even be experienced with it. Later, my cousin Matt and my best friend at the time, Jesse Roberts, the two of them introduced me to the game almost simultaneously, independently of each other, and started showing me some of their cards from like the Dark and from Revised. And then later that year, I got my own cards and dove in immediately. So I've been playing ever since 94.
There you go. Off to the races.
And I've been playing competitively since they had a Pro Tour back in 96. Or before that, I guess. But.
So what's been your favorite set and why?
My favorite set? That's a tricky one because it changes over time depending on your perspective. Because when I was a kid, I was really, like, when I was early on in Magic, I was very innocent. Like, there was, you always remember some set from back in the day super fondly, but it doesn't necessarily play as well by today's standards because all the sets now are so much better designed than most of the sets from back in the day. I think everybody's first set really has a special place in their heart. And for me, Revised really stands out, although I like Beta better, but, I think the best set that I've – Innistrad is probably the best design set, and okay. I really like Khans of Tarkir block.
Okay, excellent. And you're right about that first set being sweet. I came in during the Tempest storyline, so I loved, you know, like Gerard and Volrath and, you know, the set's Stronghold.
That's just the
and all those.
Anyway.
And I mean, that's when I came in, and so that's obviously – yeah. So cool. So now I don't want – your favorite, because I know that's really hard. So what's one of your favorite cards of all time?
Well, my number one favorite, Super.
Oh, you do have one. Great. What is it?
Jace the Mind Sculptor, better than all.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. Excellent. So what makes Magic fun for you? Like, why have you kept playing all these years?
There are a lot of different dimensions that make Magic fun, but the distilling it down, there's first and foremost the people. That I've met so many amazing people from all over the world, so many different walks of life, and had so many great experiences with this culture where we have the shared language. But as far as the game itself, ever since I was shown Magic, I've never been bored ever again. There's always more to think about. There's so much proximal learning and so much being in flow, and it's this world that never ends. It's super awesome. What about you?
I love that, like you said, there's so many, I love that the game starts before you sit down, you know? I love that it's like this game, you know, games come in boxes with pieces and stuff like that, and this game has thousands of pieces that we call cards, and we get to pick, depending on the format that you're playing, you get to pick from all these thousands of pieces the cards that you want in your deck, and that's where the game starts. And then I sit down across the table from you, and you know, your pieces, your cards get to interact with mine, and we just get to see, it's a different game every time you play. You know, that's what I love about it. That's what I love about it.
Super cool.
What's your proudest Magic moment to date?
Proudest Magic moment. It's probably split between being inducted into the Magic Hall of Fame and being voted into the Magic Hall of Fame and winning Pro Tour Journey to Knicks.
Absolutely. I figured that would be it.
the being inducted into the Hall of Fame is sort of the lifetime. Like, it's spread out over the course of my entire life, all of the things that led up to that moment. And there was that real validation of, you know, being honored in that way. It's very humbling and very powerful. And it has been the thing that has meant the most. And then on the competitive side, actually winning a Pro Tour, the other like in-game accomplishments pale in comparison to it, because there is nothing like actually winning. I mean, being first place is so different than second, and I can't tell you how painful it is to come in second at World Championships and coming in second at Pro Tours and second in Grand Prix. Second is the hardest sometimes, and I know that it's tough, because that seems like, oh, aren't you so happy about that? And you are, but it is a different thing. Winning an actual Pro Tour, though, was even better than I ever dreamed.
Awesome.
It made the previous 21 years, the previous 20 years, all of it was worth it, if only for that. I could die the next day and be a happy man.
Awesome, man. And I know myself included and many others were very happy for you as well. So that's great. As we transition from your start as a Magic player to what you have going on today, I do want to touch, and we've talked about a little bit, on your rise, you know, to the upper tiers of the Magic community. How does someone make a name for themselves today, you know, in our Magic community? And are the things that you did, do they work today? And what's your perspective?
So are you talking about in terms of playing, or you're making a name for yourself?
Yeah, like being like getting noticed and moving up.
Well, wait, getting noticed and moving up are very different things. Are you talking about moving up in the competitive scene? Like in terms of like getting qualified for the Pro Tour, or winning winning an FNM, or winning a regional PTQ, or
in GPs and Pro Tours, so that the Magic community at large kind of knows who you are.
Well, I guess then it depends. If your goal is actually for people to know who you are, I guess it really depends on what you want that to mean. There are a lot of crazy things that get you noticed where people know who you are, but that's not necessarily the same as building a reputation for playing well. And I think focusing on getting, I mean, there are some people that, and this can totally be totally reasonable, but if your focus is on, for instance, if you're trying to make a bunch of music or do a bunch of card alters, or promote tournaments, or there are a number of things you might want to do that would put more weight on people noticing you. But if your goal is to win at Magic more and to be the best player you can be, focusing on people noticing you is actually a distracting side quest that can actually take away and impede your growth. If you focus on making yourself the best player you can be and focus on finding the best competition you can play with to prepare with, all of the rest of the stuff, you get noticed. If you are, no, but you can't do well at Magic. You can't continue to improve at Magic and not get noticed eventually. And it's much more powerful to not be trying to sell yourself to people, but instead just demonstrate what you can do on the merits, like produce results. If you can go from just getting into the tournament scene to transitioning to winning FNMs, to transitioning to making day two of a Grand Prix, to transitioning into cash in Grand Prix, into possibly even eventually qualifying for the Pro Tour. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people click on Wizards' webpage and see the coverage and see all the people who made top eight of the Grand Prix.
Good point. Yeah.
But you can also just meet a bunch of people. The other side of it, because it is useful to meet more people, to have, you know, new experiences and to gain as much insight as you can. And the key is be an awesome human being. Be reasonable to people. You know, if you're just, if you're just like a reasonable dude, if you're like an easy guy or gal to get along with that is like fun to be around, the people come after you. They want to be around people who are fun, awesome people who like something they like.
Yeah, agreed. I've definitely seen that. I've experienced that, you know, people that have that gravitas, you just kind of want to be around them for sure. So, bringing things to present times, right now, what do you consider your best or your favorite format?
Standard, I'd say.
Okay.
Both in terms, I mean, among all the normal, you know, because still the 21-time Mental Magic World Champion, but in terms of actual, like, the normal format, standard is my primary focus. It is both the one I enjoy working on the most and the one that I have the highest win percentage in.
So what are you playing in standard right now? Or do you switch it up or?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I play whatever, but, recently over the past, I guess 9 months, Abzan has been the deck I've played the most, but I've played a few other, I mean, I've played a variety of other things and I certainly test everything, but, Abzan control is the thing I've played the most. And I think if I were to play in a standard tournament right now, it is very possible that I would play Abzan because I haven't been focusing on standard. I've been focusing on modern, and I would want to go with something I'm comfortable with because I think standard right now is very much a format that rewards people for playing strategies they're good with.
So that kind of leads into a follow-on thought that I had or a question. So do you stick with one archetype the whole season for familiarity or switch it up based on what's winning?
Well, no, I mean, I'll play anything. It's just that it's not so much based on what's winning. It's that if I have time to prepare, because I work, you know, I have to work like 80 plus hours a week. If I sometimes will just not have very much time to prepare and will have to use a lot of shortcuts regarding how to get the best preparation I can with the time that I have available and instead rely on conversations and 21 years of experience to try to get by. Other times I'll be in a spot where I can actually playtest a little. And if I can actually playtest and try out different decks, I will play anything. I just want whatever gives me the best chance to win. I mean, in a vacuum, I love playing control and would default to playing a control deck, like a blue-white control or blue-black control or something. But the reason I mentioned defaulting to Abzan or something like that is because I've been focusing on a different format where I've been spending my testing time preparing for modern. It's better if I'm going to play a standard tournament to play something that I have that I have experience with. I think too many people switch which deck they're playing over and over and over again just because they want to play whatever's hot right now. If you're literally a master of everything, you can definitely do that. But most people are not. Most people would be much better served to get comfortable with a deck. And if it's not working for them, feel free to switch. But you don't want to be switching every single week.
Right. Yeah, that, and you read my mind. That I was going to say, my thought was, I guess it depends also on the player. Someone like you with lots of experience would have a much better chance, you know, switching to, you know, quote, more popular deck or whatever than someone like me who would probably benefit from, you know, playing what I practice, like you talked about earlier, as opposed to just switching to the hot thing. So,
well, and yeah. I benefit also from playing what I practice. I think that you have to weigh, though, how confident can you be that you will play something proficiently and somebody who has played every archetype many, 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 many times can have a higher degree of confidence in whether or not they will be able to play a deck at a satisfactory level of proficiency. If you haven't played 10,000 hours of Magic, you probably want to focus on a deck for a little bit, at least some amount of time. And the thing is, though, if you play in a tournament and you did not like it, don't force yourself to stay with it. Play something else. However, even if you lost, even if you went 0-3 drop, if you actually liked it, if you felt like you were getting better, if it was something that was appealing to you, stick with it, you know?
How long does it take for you to get that feel? Like, you know, first game, you're like, whoa, this deck is not my thing, or does it take...
Are you talking about for me personally or for an individual? Because
for you.
I've spent 30,000 hours of my life thinking about Magic. I can always look at a deck and know if it's for me or not.
Just by looking? You don't even have to play?
I can look at a deck.
That's awesome.
And as long as the math is there, I can't know whether or not it's the best. Whether or not it's the best, I generally need a huge amount of work. That is very, very, very difficult. But if a bunch of authorities that I trusted, a bunch of people that I thought were very, very good told me this is what they think is the best deck to play, I can look at it and know whether or not it is for me.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So something else that's current that I know you have going on are your books. Like, I know you're doing a signing coming up and things like that. So congrats on that.
Thanks.
I guess one thing, how come there's not more out there? Like, if you're the only one that I really know of that has, you know, hey, like here's Magic. We all love it. And here's a book that I wrote to kind of get some knowledge out there and help people improve. Like, why, in your opinion, why isn't there more of that out there?
Why don't more people write Magic books?
Yeah.
Good question. That's a subject very near and dear to my heart. I am very, very interested in seeing a lot more Magic books because I think that there is a huge amount of... There's so much more that can be said and done with Magic media, Magic teaching, Magic culture, Magic experiences, Magic stories, Magic anything, even in the casual creation, all sorts of stuff, Magic art. There's tons and tons of aspects of Magic culture. And I think that it very much is just the fact that we are, even though 21 years can seem like a long time, 22 years now, we are very much still in the infancy of what Magic is capable of and where Magic is going to go. And it is only relatively recently that people have even begun to see how much there is in Magic culture possible. I think a big part of it is just that a lot of the people who could write a book about Magic come from a background that isn't a book writing background. They are people who are playing in Magic tournaments and stuff. You don't just, there isn't already a bunch of demand for Magic books that has, there isn't already somebody who is making Magic books with 100 different authors. And I think in the future, when more people learn how to even make books, because making books is not exactly a trivial thing. When True. More people learn how to actually do the whole thing, I think that there's going to be more in the future. But I would love to see more Magic books. I think that there should be a lot more Magic books than there are right now.
Cool. Cool. I agree.
Oh, and you mentioned, by the way, before jumping, Next Level Deck Building is the most recent book. Next Level Magic was the first one, as we alluded to earlier. But Next Level Deck Building is the one that actually this upcoming weekend, from the perspective of people listening, will be of last weekend. But last weekend, we've been in Charlotte doing a book signing. So that was I'm sure it was super cool from time traveling perspective.
Exactly. So now no one expects to win every time. That's a given. However, I personally know that it's frustrating to feel like you play and play and play and, you know, don't improve. So, you know, Pro Tutor listeners, myself included, they want to know, you know, how can they actually improve? So what I want is to ask, what is the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then what can we do to avoid that mistake?
Say the biggest mistake that I see people make is focusing their energy on convincing themselves and others that they are already good enough instead of seeking the truth and fearlessly seeking the truth and using that to make their game as good as possible. And that this manifests
how do they,
in so many ways.
How do they find the truth?
For instance, after each playtest session, heck, after each game, after each tournament, after each any amount of time in which you played some games of Magic, or after a specific single game, asking yourself what you can learn. You probably shouldn't do it between game one and two of a match in a tournament, but after the match, asking yourself, what can you learn from the match you just played? Because most people will be very focused on how unlucky their draw was. They'll focus on their opponent getting so lucky and top decking a card. They'll focus on how they didn't draw the card they wanted. They'll focus on all these things that are not the important thing. When they win, they focus on how great they are, you know, and what they instead could be doing is looking at the match and asking themselves, what could I have done better? What could I have done to give myself any amount of better chances to win? Because even if you played super well, your opponent played horrible, you got unbelievably unlucky to lose, was there literally anything you could have done in that match? Could you have not tapped your mana wrong and given yourself a tiny, tiny little percent chance better? Could you have better anticipated what your opponent could have in their deck? Could you have played slightly faster? Could you have had, could your deck have been built slightly differently? Could you have killed a different creature or not taken 2 points of damage? If you can't identify a mistake you made in each of your losses, not that changed the outcome, because sometimes you can identify a mistake that literally cost you the match.
Right.
Sometimes you can't, though. Sometimes it's just, what could you have done to give yourself a tiny little bit better of chance? If you can't find a single thing that you could have done to give yourself a better chance in most of your matches, then you have definitely got to focus more on awareness and realizing what's even going on, because that is a sign that you are not, that you're missing what's really important. So focusing on what can you actually, like, what did you learn? If you have a notebook and you literally just record one thing you learned or that you could have done better or a mistake you made that you could do better in the future, literally anything, get one of those from most of your matches. There's occasionally going to be a match where you literally didn't get to do almost anything. And even then you probably did something wrong, but it can be hard to see sometime. But over the course of, like, you should definitely have at least 8 things you can do better for every 10 matches you play.
That, everybody, you need to hit the rewind 30-second button a couple times and listen to that again, because there was a bunch of nuggets that Patrick just dropped that are really, really good. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. That's going to be really good. It's going to be really good. So, Patrick, I want to acknowledge you for all you've done so far in the multiverse. And the insights you've shared so far have been awesome. We've learned a ton so far already, and I'm super pumped to see what you have to say in the next section here. Well, there you have it, everyone. Part one of an amazing interview with Patrick Chapin. He dropped some real value bombs today. Be sure to join us in episode 2, where we walk through the evolution of a set and we get some more nuggets from Patrick. mtgprotutor.com/Patrick Chapin is where you can find the show notes for today. Now, if you're interested in our booster draft giveaway, you can go to mtgprotutor.com/podcast launch to get details there. Basically, go to iTunes, subscribe to the MTG Pro Tutor podcast, and leave an honest rating and review. Then take a screenshot and send that screenshot to me via email or social media. The reason why is because I need a way to reach out to you and let you know that you've won, and iTunes doesn't give me contact information. Now, I'm serious about the honest rating and review. I really want to make this show the best it can be for everybody. Obviously, I would love a 5-star rating because it would motivate me to keep the show going and help people like you find this show, but I really want to know what you liked, what you didn't like, what you thought I did good, what you think I could do better, because I want this show to be the best for you. So head on over to iTunes, subscribe, leave an honest rating and review, take a screenshot, and send it my way. I'm Sean Penrod, and we'll see you in the next cast.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of MTG Pro Tutor. To get more of the top deck building tips and tricks, head over to mtgprotutor.com and join the mailing list. Make sure you let us know which of your favorite Pro Tour players you'd like to hear on the show so we can help you play like a pro. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on MTG Pro Tutor.